Drew, good morning.
Shane, good
How
morning.
are
Can you hear
you?
me, sir?
Yeah, I can.
I'm very well. My son Aaron, as you know, is home with me, and I'm just throwing a little light lunch at him as we kick
Okay,
things
what's
off.
your son's age?
He is 17 months.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and our daughter is
Oh
two and
my
a
gosh.
half. Let me see if I can come up here real quick. There we
I
are.
loved it. Hey, good to see you. I'd
I
love
had some
to.
work clothes on earlier, but
You
they
don't
got
even have
dirty.
work clothes on. This is a casual affair.
Let me flip. I don't use Zoom all that often. You can tell I'm a government guy, not hip to
Right.
the private
Yeah.
sector
Because
ways.
it's full of holes. Oh my gosh, look at that.
Yes.
Sweetest kid ever. Oh my gosh. Kind of has his dad's looks. Is that fair? I don't know what your wife looks like, but.
Yeah, let me see if I've got. So here's our home. Here's where I have a nice little townhouse. My wife is Jewish.
I was just doing more personal stuff with Drew, so I thought I'd pause that. Let's do this. Dave, you had sent me an email first, so I'll address yours, and then Drew, you've got a question there too, so I'll make sure we get to yours.
Sounds
And as
good.
I said, or maybe before you got on there, Dave, given that it's the holiday, I've had a few people say they're not going to be able to make it, so be a small group, which is great. Dave, you were talking about asking a question about how to structure your team, and you have these two guys that do, it sounds like installation and service. These are the two parts that you're wanting to separate, but still have them work close together. Yeah.
That is correct. And another layer of that is, and I've been since that email kind of churning this around and listening to your module four videos about like just trying to put the agnostic approach of, forget ego, forget relationships, like what roles do we actually need? And the more I'm dicing this up, I really feel like service and installation director, like as a role, needs to be a single person. And then under that envelope is our order fulfillment side. Where I have a hard time, once I come back to reality of like, these are my people and this is who I'm dealing with, I like struggle to define, okay, this guy who I really would like to put in this director position is not there as much, as far as like just physically there. And the times when we need our installers to be communicating, I guess that's where it goes from director to manager, and it starts to structure out, in a more like clear way. That it makes sense to have, okay, like you have the service and installation director, and then under that envelope is the operations manager. Maybe I have like a senior lead installer who also reports to this guy. Then comes the, okay, these are the actual people. This guy who I'm considering for the, operations manager role to be going up to service and installation director is, working more, getting paid more. So like that power dynamic, and what does that look like? So.
Yeah, so you can absolutely have power dynamics where people get paid more that are lower levels. For example, sales guys, it's very common for salespeople to make more than operators. So they may even have to report into an operating director. And so that happens
Okay.
for
Yeah, and
sure.
that makes me feel a little bit better. And that analogy, because it is common for salespeople to just like, they're, so to speak, entry level, but if they hustle and they earn, then they,
They
can
usually get
survive.
a commission, or they get. So what you've got to be conscious of is you've got to help that. So just so I understand, I'm going to diagram this out here so that I'm clear. You're looking to have one person do installation and service.
I
Now,
would
in
have
my
wanted
mind,
that.
those are two very separate things. Help me understand why they're the same thing.
Yeah, so I look at it as all of the field activities of delivering are, whether it's a service or install, it's the field activities, because those lump under the same allocation of resources, which is manpower. You know, in our world, it's trucks, right? You know, mm-hmm. trucks with leaders, trucks with techs, and there's a lot of crossover there. Sometimes a tech has okay. to get pulled into an install because of technical services, right?
Right. Okay, that helps me. So that's good. So, you know, now I want you to imagine, not just the role you're creating now, but I want you to imagine the organization triples in size and you've got to attract really high talent, which means you've got to have the ability to inflate a title. So that's why, you know, I wouldn't say get a COO, because once you get a COO at a 30-person company, there's no upward mobility. They've already hit their right. ceiling and it's overstated, right? So you're right to be thinking in terms of this is director level that you're talking about. But imagine that this organization triples in size. You're doing a lot of the same kinds of things. What is the next level up? And what's that level up after that? In your mind, what are the steps that get all the way to the top for that path? Because whoever you put in that role, you want them to be the material to get on that path. Now, they may not be. It's entirely possible that, you know, they're really good at this level. And when you get to the next level, you're going to have to trade them out. That's fine. That's okay. But I just want to see where your mind is when you're thinking about what comes next after that.
And that's a great question. And I had mentioned too that I had a review on Monday night with the guy who I'm considering for this director position. And I asked him a simple question of like, where do you want to be in the next 1 year or in the next year, as well as the next 5 years? Mm-hmm. And his answer was great. He said, in 5 years, I'd like to be sitting in your seat, which okay. essentially means that, you know, he wants some authority to, you know, be able to, you know, determine the course of the company and the people working.
Throughout. What is your title?
So my title, I call myself principal, right? At the end of yeah. the day, my father is still the, you know, president, founder, you know, and he still, you know, from a legal standpoint, owns the company. From an operational day to day, you know, I have, you know, absorbed that leadership role. And, you know, but keep in mind that we're very linear right now. And, you know, pretty much anyone in, you know, whether it's their first day or they've been here for 20 years, like has direct access to me. And that's where we need in order to grow, to create these layers. And so to answer your question of like, where is the upward mobility for that particular position, it would probably be in a, you know, operating officer or a, you know, VP of operations, sort of, you know, role.
Yeah. So, awesome. So that helps. And so just so I'm clear, you have two people. One person is coming in at 6 a.m., leaving at 7 at night, working really hard with service and stuff like that. And he's got 3 years of experience. He makes about 70 to 80K, if I recall correct. Yeah. Right. And then you got another who's been with you 2 years, got an MBA, very helpful in operational impact, all that stuff. But he's coming in at 9, he's working 40 hours a week, and he's making 60,000 a year. So about 20,000 a year less, working fewer hours. But you would like to promote the one working fewer hours up above because he has some skills this person doesn't. Is that correct?
Skills as well as the like qualifications, right? Again, the MBA, the people skills, the, you know, leadership skills. So he's okay. not a technical guy. He's not been there, walked the path of the installers. However, like he has a pretty good job. He does a pretty good job of like connecting and empathy and that sort of thing.
Okay. So, and your concern is that, what is your biggest concern? That the guy who works 70, 80 hours a week is going to be resentful that this guy got promoted?
Well, I think so. It's all about how you communicate it, right? So sure. I look at the staging the ascent diagram in terms of like I did the step, the base camp one of like, hey, guys, this is an idea that we're going to explore in 2022 is adding managers. We need leadership roles. And we also need to create some distance between, you know, everyone in the company that, you know, it can't all just funnel up to me every last problem that happens. And they were like, we get it. We want to, like, we both want to do it. So, cause right now they're like this, right? They work, they literally, their desks are right next to each other. They, you know, work together constantly. Yeah. This guy's like making sure we have everything that we need to do the job. This guy's making sure that we have the bandwidth on our schedule and everything's geographically, logistically working. So adding layers to them would be like, technically the guy who is, you know, mapping everything out is, you know, the visionary for the department. And this, and the other guy is, you know, more so letting him know, like, hey, we can or can't, in terms of, you know, this product's not going to land for another 3 weeks, so you can't, you know, put it on until then. But that's sort of like, you know, process mapping. So I think it's how we communicate it, right? Is like, I don't necessarily have to stage it in a way that's like, you know, Tim, like, don't call me anymore. Like, you know, I want to hear from this role. I want to hear from our installers too. I just want to have, I want to hear from people in a structured way.
Yeah.
Not in a, more of that. That's the kind of direction where I'm trying to go.
Okay. So what's the biggest concern you have?
I think kind of what I said before about like a power dynamic, you know what I mean?
And so just so I understand, you're saying, out of curiosity, are you planning any other manager roles, or is it just this one director role?
I'm sorry. I think my internet cut out for a second.
Okay. Are you back?
I'm back.
Okay. Are you considering creating any other director roles?
Yeah. So the way I wrote it out was I need basically, and just these are like sales director, service and installation director, financial controller, and then a technical services director, which is an idea that, you know, I kind of came up with my brother-in-law, you know, in a leadership role at DuPont. He was telling me, you need an in-house guy who's just like knows the product. Anytime there's a product question, technical, you know, the sales guys go to him. The service and installation guys go to him. The apprentices, when they're like coming on board, this is the first guy they see, is like the gatekeeper of all knowledge related to product. So this technical service director, that is somebody who's here in the company 20 years that just knows his stuff. Currently in a sales/technical, you know, role now, but, you know, there's so those are the four roles right now. I mentioned last week, four positions, four areas that I'm trying to delineate. And that's what I've defined so far.
Okay. So you've got four roles you want to fill. Those other three roles sound pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I would say so. Sales, okay. Financial.
And all of them are going to have people reporting into them. Yeah.
Right.
So that you're going to have intermediaries instead of everybody going to you. Good.
Correct.
Okay. So the then is the vision that in the, what's the name of the role that we're debating now that we're talking about?
Service and installation director.
Okay. Service and installation director. What's the name of the guy who you want?
Brian.
And what's the name of the other guy?
Tim.
Tim. Okay. Brian and Tim. Okay. So you want Brian up in that role. Tim reports to him. Is that a one-way report, meaning then Tim manages everybody else, or is Tim one of many that Brian manage?
Tim would be one of many. So you have the senior lead installer, the senior lead service tech, customer service reps, and the operations manager, which is Tim.
Okay. And why is Tim paid more than Brian currently?
Mainly I would say two things: seniority, industry knowledge and experience, and also again, like the actual responsibilities that are on Tim's plate are much larger than Brian's right now.
Okay. So just so you know, the moment you put Brian over Tim, Brian is now accountable for Tim's KPIs as much as Tim is.
Right.
Brian then holds Tim accountable. What that means is, Tim is now the throat you choke, forgive the metaphor, for when things go wrong. Not Tim. Brian is now the guy. And if Brian is now the guy and he has that responsibility, that authority, and that accountability, remember we talked about span of control and accountability and authority, all those things have to match. If that matches, that means he may or may not be able to come in at 9 a.m. He might, but he's got to understand what you're offering him is a promotion that may require different kinds of availability. And therefore, you might also need to pay him a commensurate rate. I'm not saying you have to pay him more than the guy who's been there longer. You can have an argument, but you probably want to close that pay gap more than you were planning to.
Right, exactly. And so my solution to that was, you know, in the review was, you know, this is where we're at now. This is where we're going. So basically that stepping stone of like, you know, there's a, you know, 10% increase now. And then there's like another like 5 on the other side of that. Like once we get this all in place and there's like these systems working, and then also tying the business performance to, these four people up top, like they should also be like tied to business performance.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yep, absolutely. So anyway, the reason this is important is I think the way you framed it was you were saying, well, this guy worked harder than that guy and now he's going to be above. That's not the way to think about it. The way to think about it is who is ultimately held accountable for the KPIs in that business unit.
Makes
and
sense.
If he's ultimately held accountable, it doesn't matter how many hours he works. It matters whether he delivers on the KPIs. And if he works half the hours and still retains the morale of his team and is still outperforming on KPIs, he's just a better worker than other people potentially. Or he could work half the hours and people could hate him for it. And he could lose his ability to influence, lose his credibility, and therefore be held accountable that way too.
Right.
And that's exactly. The point is you start to go, you're now accountable, which means this whole organization sinks or swims on you. And Tim, Brian is now accountable, sinks or swims on him. It's not your, you're not going to be the guy who's going to be over this. He is.
Right. Right.
So, okay. I just wanted to be clear for you that you start thinking in terms of, you did the agnostic thing, which is right. And now you've done the personality thing, which is what you do second. And now you bridge the two. And I think the way you bridge it is you try to bridge it as much as humanly possible into the agnostic reality. And if that can't be done, there are ways around it, but that's the ideal. So you go, okay, I understand this is where he was, this is what's happening. But if you were to hire somebody from the outside into that role, what would you have to do to attract them?
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I think that it's, again, one of those, we're going to come up with this together as a group, right? So, you know, defining again, and this is where I looked at the RACI chart and I have questions about that too, in terms of like how nitty gritty you want to get with that, because there's so many different like functions that, you know,
the only thing you have to worry about on a RACI chart is anywhere where there's tension. So the point of a RACI chart is never to be exhaustive. It's only to try to delineate those things that are not clear.
Got it. Okay. So it's just for like the gray areas.
Yeah. Hey, this seems kind of gray. There seems to be a lot of debate and discussion around that. I'm going to clarify it with a RACI chart. All these other things I don't need to detail, I don't need to document because nobody's upset about it. So yeah, you don't want to add lots and lots of like managerial tools. It just creates complexity unless there is confusion.
That makes sense.
The point of a RACI is clarity. You're playing with power and authority, you're creating clarity. And so I think it is useful to do a RACI for Tim and Brian so they understand like, hey, this is the guy with the A now. And you're now the C, not the A. And that means something.
Right.
You know, so that's an important conversation. There may be instances where they both get an A, but the key thing about a RACI is whenever humanly possible, try to only have one A. When you have multiple A's, you lose the point of it. It's okay to have multiple A's. In some cases, it has to exist, but you try to limit that whenever possible. And there can only be one R. You can never have more than one R.
Got it.
So those are some rules there.
Well, okay. Thanks for your help, man.
Good for now. I'll come back to you in a bit. I want to jump onto some others. Yeah. Mention Michelle. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Sorry to be late.
No problem.
Hello.
I'm gonna jump over to Drew. Drew's new, just joining us. For those of you who don't know, Drew works as a chief of staff in the at the Capitol, and is in the intelligence business. And Drew, your question. I got the question at the high level. Unpack it for me a little bit more in detail so that I can be more helpful.
Shane, I appreciate it. Happy holidays to everyone else on the line. Excited to be here. I've got a 17-month-old son running around, just for a warning, who's homesick with me today, if you hear some of that in the background. My question at the high level was, how can you help persuade or convince others that your priorities are their priorities? And, you know, in a chief of staff job, by extension, it's that the boss's priorities and vision are their priorities and vision. Or that if the company is going through a great deal of change, as I mentioned with Shane, my organization is going through a merger and acquisition right now. And strategic plans and new leadership philosophies and goals are changing. What are some of the best practices that I can employ to help garner buy-in?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at.
That's helpful. So Drew, I'm aware that you have sensitivities and information, certain information can't be shared. So I want to be, you know, sensitive to that. However, I am most helpful to you when you can give me specifics. So if you have to speak in code, but what I can do is help you structure conversations, very specific conversations. So instead of kind of generalized best practices, it would help me to understand kind of, hey, here's what I'm thinking needs to happen. And here's what this guy who I need to convince is thinking that's happening. How do I get a meeting of the minds on that? So are you able to give me some more context?
Yeah, sure. I mean, very specifically, in this merger process, we're blending some components and we don't need all of the supervisors and managers.
Got it.
So some are going to have to go away. Yep, we have some redundancies. We're looking to gain some efficiencies. Now we're looking to relocate those supervisors and managers to like roles around the enterprise. But at the end of the day, they're losing their role. They're not losing their job because they work for the government. Nobody loses their job in the government, which is unfortunate sometimes. But in the nature of those critical conversations, you know, being sensitive to the human condition at play.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's some ego. Those are going to be very tough conversations to have early next year as we identify what those positions are. And in addition to being mindful of those dynamics, you know, trying to convince them, I mean, not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes here, but just trying to convince them that the leadership team has made these decisions in the best interests of the organization and the best interests of mission. And kind of folding that all in.
Okay, so and is your boss not on board with this, or are you saying the way you framed the question was he has one way, you have another way, and you're wanting to get meeting of the minds? What is his view on what should happen?
Yeah, no, sorry if I wasn't clear. I think at the supervisory and managerial level, at kind of that frontline level, they have perspective on where the organization ought to go as part of this merger. And that does not comport with the senior leadership teams.
I see.
So we have invited a lot of input. We've gotten a lot of feedback on how to restructure resource authorities, et cetera. We took some of it, not all of it. And I think the senior management team, we're all on the same page with where we need to go. And now circling back on what that final decision is, letting them know why we made that decision and if and how they're a part of the new organization or all elements of the conversation.
Got it. So you're saying there's a handful, about how many are we talking about that are in this second rung down that don't largely agree with you and that are going to be materially impacted?
10 to 12.
10 to 12. And how many are in the senior leadership team that have made the decision?
Seven.
Okay. And these 10 to 12 presumably report into those seven?
They do.
Okay. And so just another clarification about the process. So the 7 to 12 had a set of ideas and opinions about what should happen, and they presented those to the 10 to 12, and the 10 to 12 said, we don't like that. And now they're deliberating and going back to them? Or is it the top level said to the second level, hey, what do you guys think should happen? Open-ended question, the clay is wet, tell us how you would shape it. And the second level said, we'd shape it like this. And then the senior level went back and like, that's not gonna work. We gotta go back and redo it. Which one of those? One is it was partially baked, the other one it was wet clay.
Yeah, I mean, a bit of that has happened already. We were at a wet clay stage some weeks ago. We solicited a lot of input, variety of focus groups. We soundboarded some of the initial ideas. And then I don't want to say went into conclave, but working with other senior leaders around the enterprise, made final decisions. We've got an organizational structure to roll out with early next year. And in addition to the seven, there's like 20 more who, you know,
we're going to be affected.
who are, yeah, definitely going to be affected, but for the most part, they agree with kind of where we're headed and where we're at. Oh, and by the way, they're not losing their jobs. But I think too, you know, and so you've got this awkward overlay where part of the seven don't agree with the organizational structure and they're losing their job, but those are very mutually exclusive situations.
Yeah.
So totally we don't want anyone to think that they're right. It's a punitive decision by any stretch.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But it's
look,
a complicating dynamic.
I've been in church and government consulting. So I know that there's just for the rest of you who are listening in the government world, when you get a job in government, that's your family. You're with them for 30 years. So whatever mistakes are made, you have to live with them for the next 30 years. And so there's tremendous sensitivities, and reorganizations are a lot harder to do than in traditional corporate settings where you just, you know, transition people out when they don't fit anymore. And that kind of toxic voice no longer exists. And you can't really get rid of toxic voices in the US government. You kind of have to work within that. So that's the context. That's the sensitivity that Drew is trying to manage and deal with and try to minimize. So a couple of things I would say in the future, and this may have already happened, but as a general rule, without me knowing all the details, as a general rule, I always use what I call an 80-20 rule when you do change management in organizations. The 80-20 in this case is the senior most leader and or leaders come up with what they know the parameters are. You create boundary conditions that you're simply not going to live outside of. Even though you think the employees or the team doesn't want that, you have to provide that. You go, hey, here's reality. We want you to step into it. We want you to understand it. Here are the blocks you can't move. Here are the blocks that aren't going to move. Here's how those blocks are going to be. Now, if you want to figure out what color these blocks are painted, and if you want that one block to move somewhere else, tell us. We want to hear all about it. But you don't give them too much span of control, even when you're soliciting input, because it sets the expectation that I'm going to get what I want. And so when you don't give them what they want, they're frustrated by that. Whereas if you go
and
you
really
can only get so much, and here's how much you get, and we want to hear all about it. But our job as leaders is to set the priorities of the organization. And we've set those priorities, and we've identified what things by virtue of our line of sight. We have the ability to see things. We have access to information you guys don't have. And that means here are the walls that can't be moved in the structure that we're trying to change. So that's a load-bearing wall, can't move that. That's another load-bearing wall, can't move that. That's a window, we're not going to lose light. But within that, we can add and change a few things. We're happy to play with that. So did that happen, or was it a little more like, hey, we know changes are coming, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it was the latter.
Okay.
It was a little too unbounded.
Good. So you've set yourself up for some hard times ahead.
Yes, no, that's no right. But that's a great lesson that I will carry forward when this happens again.
Please do. Please
do. Another big change management conversations. That's really, that's prudent.
Change management begins with you set the expectations for them. You know, normally I would say it in a certain way in a corporate context, but because I know you're dealing with a whole lot of egos and a whole lot of people that you're going to have to keep seeing in the hallways after they've been injured emotionally, these are delicate conversations. How many are you personally going to have?
Of the conversations, probably 4 to 5.
4 to 5. Okay. Then in that case, it's the only thing you have control over. So to advise you on how to have conversations with people that aren't there, unless the other leaders you have their ear and they're looking to you for advice. Is that happening?
Yes.
Okay. So you
have already tried to outline some boundaries for these conversations. So we're starting to firm up, you know, what conceptually the talking points need to be. And it's the government. So we need to be mindful of all of the HR policies at play too, right? Like it needs to be dispassionate and objective. These need to be performance-based and documented sort of conversations.
Yeah, you know, the thing that you'll have to take my advice with a grain of salt, what I'm about to say, because you work in a very specific thing with lots of regulations that may prevent some of what I'm suggesting. But I'll tell you that one of the things that I often do is I love to leak information down through an organization. You know, I know leak is normally a bad word in your world, but in this case, a leak is really useful. And what that does is it creates awareness in unofficial ways. Unofficial awareness is really helpful. And what that, and so, because that's staging the ascent, right? You're in the early stages of change management. And if you're not formally allowed to announce something, you which you've already kind of done, you've kind of indicated like, hey, some changes are happening. We're going to be losing, you know, we're going to have some redundancies, and it's possible your role is at stake. We haven't firmed that up yet. I'm going to let you know in a couple of weeks. That comment creates some anxiety. But as long as you don't go too long between that conversation and the next one, which is the understanding conversation, you actually help prepare them for the next conversation. Whereas if you just come up cold and go, hey, looks like you're redundant. Here's what the implications are. Here's why. Here's what that means. Starting effective immediately. Give me your keys. You're going to that building over there. That is a hard thing to do to somebody emotionally. Now, you may not be able to do that in a government context. So I'm going to tell you how I would do it in the non-government context, and then we can play with how you might need to adjust that. So in a non-government context, if I knew there were three or four people that were going to be hit, I'd probably go sit down with them and say, hey, guys, I want to be straight with you. Some changes are coming. It is probably going to affect your roles. We're not entirely clear yet how. We're gonna be having conversations over the next couple of weeks. I recognize this creates anxiety, confusion. I don't expect you guys to be happy about this, but I want you to know that I'm thinking of you. And if I were in your shoes, I want to know some of this. Even if I don't have all the certainty, I'm gonna be we're gonna be making some changes. You have any questions?
That's really good.
I'll see if I can answer any of your questions. Some of them I won't be able to answer. They go, what about this, and this? And you're like, can't answer that. We're not sure about that, but I will come back to you. Then you come back into it, you do the whole thing, you button it up, you go back to them, you go, okay, guys, it's going to be 2 months from now, this change is going to be in place. So you got about 2 months to figure out how, and so this is where you give a longer lead time, especially in government, if you can. You may not be able to, but a longer lead time. And you say, here's what's happening, here's why, here are the changes that are being made. What comments, questions do you have? Then you'd have one-to-ones with them. You'd follow up again. You go, hey, we got a couple of months. I know this was hard. I know this isn't what you wanted. We really did. We really value you. We really wanted you. We understand that just these trade-offs, whatever you got to say, but you're trying to communicate value. What you're doing is you're allowing time to pass for people to turn the corner. And where possible, whenever possible, you want to give people the feeling of choice. And that can come in lots of different ways. So for example, sometimes choice is, do you want to take another job with another organization? Do you want to leave this organization as a whole? Another choice could be simply as simple as like, hey, you've got a choice in which office you're going to be in. Do you want this one or that one? And so you find places where you give them agency, choice, power.
That's good. Yeah, that empowers. That's good.
So that they go, I'm pissed off. I don't like this. This was done to me. I'm a victim. And I'm going to now try to sow discontent in the system. What you try to do to minimize that is A, give them time. And you try to be as much as humanly possible the person they process their discontent with. Instead of going out and infecting the rest of the organization and going, this guy's an asshole. He did this and he told me that and we're not doing that. I don't trust them anymore. They're terrible. Why would you want to work for them? Now you've got a morale problem. So you're wanting as much as possible for that discontent. And that's why you go, hey, I want to hear all about your frustrations. I want to understand them deeply. And if there's anything I can do about them, I'm the guy that you want to talk to. I want to really hear those frustrations. So you're letting them just vent and express and whatever. And then you just keep bringing it back to the reality. Like, yeah, load-bearing wall. I totally get that. I can't have you hit that wall. But guess what? We've got a wall color choice. There's light beige and dark beige. Which one do you like? And then they're like, well, I don't care about light beige. I like light beige a little bit. And all of a sudden, they had a moment of, I had choice.
Yeah.
So I'll pause there. I'm doing this in abstraction, right? Like, if I knew the details of what was going on, I'd probably have better feedback. But I'm just giving you some 40,000-foot input.
Well, I think that's really helpful. And, you know, even as I mentioned before, several weeks ago when we connected for the first couple times, that high level ascending the mountain analogy that you painted for me was something that I tangibly took forward and it had a real impact. And your point on, quote unquote, leaking information, I obviously take your point. We don't leak classified information, but leaking a game plan and starting to put it out there for barometric input, that's really savvy. Especially in an organization that's like mine, just you know, people are very connected and very matrixed, and word gets around about everything very quickly, and that will allow, you're right, people time to hear it, to digest it, to emotionally reconcile themselves to it, but then to also wrap their head around it professionally. And when we do sit down to have these conversations, they're able to better inform the conversation. And if we need to adjust fire or change course, we can do that collectively. So, no, Shane, thank you. That's very helpful stuff, even in the abstract. So.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. So the other thing, just to be kind of mindful of, and this is where you got to get creative in how you deal with this, but the sine wave is the same sine wave in every context. Change is a sine wave, or it's an infinity loop, really, but for now, a sine wave. And the sine wave is, it always begins with resistance, denial, grief, acceptance, and hope. So that's kind of where it goes. Now, if you don't give people a chance to do the resistance and the grief, and you try to cut that out and be like, everybody get excited and hopeful, what you get is people stuck in a loop. And they just ferment this bad feelings, and they don't get over it.
So yeah, one of the best things you can do is
give people a chance to fully express that feeling of, and there's actually a process that I lead people through. In some cases, you won't be able to do this, but I have them walk an infinity loop with a series of questions where they get to express all of it. And so, like, one of the questions is, what's the worst thing that is going to happen from this change? What are you most sad about? What are you losing? And you just get them to express, this is the worst, and what else bad could happen? So you've told me all these things. What else bad could happen from this change? And they're like, I hadn't even thought of it, but you're right. I'm actually more worried about this. And now that you say that, I think this is even worse. And that's a terrible idea. Most leaders can't stand that. They want to shut that down because they're afraid of people's emotions. And the best thing you can do is demonstrate that you have tremendous capacity for negative emotion and freedom for them to express it. And then at some point after they've expressed it, and the time is different depending on how big the change is. For some people, it's a week. For some people, it's a month. For some people, it's an hour. For some people, it's in the same conversation. But you give them a chance to express and name all the things. And you do it in the spirit of, just in case there's something I could change, just tell me all the things you hate about this. Tell me what you're not liking, what you fear, what you're losing that you really valued, what else bad can happen. Do all those things. And then you go, is there anything good that could come from this? What else might you gain? What are you hopeful about? You know, and so you do a gentler set of questions to bring them out of that sine wave. So you do the, and I guess it should go backwards. It should go grief is down and then up, but you get the point. So you bring them down in order to bring them up. And that's just the emotional process of all change management, no matter what context, no matter, this is just human dynamic. And it's true in your own personal life. You're forced to move jobs, okay? I don't like that. Your wife wants to do something you don't want her to do. I don't like that. I got to go through a period of disappointment into acceptance. And this is just life for all of us. And the faster we get to acceptance, the less we suffer in life. And that's another thing you can invite people to do is, you know, after they've expressed, you go, well, you got a choice now. And your choice is you could continue to feel all these things. And it would be very understandable if you did, and no one would blame you for it. But it's also possible that holding on to that is going to create more suffering for you than you need or that you want or that's going to serve you. And that, in fact, one of the things that's going to free you the most to find more enjoyment is to accept what's happened, as hard as it is. And you only earn the right to say that comment after you've really heard them.
Yeah. Spoken like a true former pastor, my friend. That's really good stuff. Because those are the dynamics that are at play day to day.
Believe me, a government is way more like a church than a corporation. Because the church is the same thing. We don't kick people out. So whoever you have there, you got to contend with. You got to still set boundaries. You got to create behavior agreements and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, they're sticking around.
That's a great analogy. I should look more into how to manage a church enterprise, it sounds like.
Oddly enough, very few churches know how to do it. I had to train them too. So you're going to get it here, I promise.
Thank you for all the time and attention.
Yeah, you bet. We can come back to you later if there's some time. Mitch or Michelle, welcome. How's it going?
It's good. Can I jump in, or Michelle?
Yeah, feel free.
No, Mitch, go right ahead.
Okay. So, I have this thing going on that I want to talk about. I'm a little bit hesitant, only because it's broad enough that I can't even in my own head find a concise, direct path through the issue, which I think is part of the problem. But if you'll bear with me, and if I start rambling, you can tell me to shut up and come back next week with a better question. But it has to do with a client of mine, and if I can, two years ago they started approaching us to help them raise capital, and this team has been around for 30 years, which is it's a really strong thing, and for 15 or 20 of those years they were kind of the darling of our world. And in the last 10 or 15 years, they've had difficulty raising capital, right? And when we dug into it, it was kind of, they lost their way from a marketing perspective. They, they're very good at what they do, and they just forgot how to tell it, right? And they got used to money coming in, and they just expected it to come in, and they got frustrated, right? That's number one. And so when we came in, we said, listen, This is just an image problem. We know your asset class. We understand your investment process. We're actually behind you. We think you should be raising money, but don't be misled. This is going to be hard, right? Because some people don't know who you are. Worse yet, many people think they know who you are and they don't, right? And so this is going to be a long, slow battle, changing the course of the battleship, right? Everybody kind of bought in. They knew at the time they needed help. Another weird thing that goes on here is that usually the investment team and the capital markets team they're in lockstep. And actually in this particular instance, they're actually not only in different cities, they're in different countries. The capital markets team is in Canada and the investment team is in Florida. And so, completely different groups, and they talk, but they operate almost autonomously. And the investment group, just expects the capital markets team to bring money in. And so Shane, in our mutual friends world, that would be like Terrell going, you guys figure it out and get money in, which is just not how this works, right? This is always like this is hand-to-hand combat.
The investment team is the product. Yeah, the investment team is the product that is being sold.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so, and just to add one more area of complexity, the capital markets team had brought in this person who, over time, we find isn't very talented, but is extraordinarily political. Like I've just had the skeevies around this person for the last 6 months because I know that she's, I can't even put it into words, but I know in my gut not to trust her. And if my gut tells me something pretty strong, I listen to it, right? And it comes, I think she's a nice person, she loves her children and all that kind of stuff. But but it's kind of like, trying to save a drowning person, like they're going to bring you down before they save themselves, right? If at all possible. And so we're a year into it, making a lot of progress. They've made mistakes, we can see it over and over, like capital markets team doesn't really work hard, and they're, and then they take to blaming us. And we're like, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. And they're like, well, we don't really see it that way. And whatever, we've been doing this a long time. And the investment team is just frustrated. And we've made direct inroads with them. And they're like, look, it's not about you, but we've been frustrated for 10 years. And we're like, we get it. We're trying to fix that problem. It just is a lot of work. So they invited me to and I'll just give you one example. For instance, there's a very large investor, like an international investor called Partners Group, based out of Switzerland, but they have a couple of offices here in New York. And one of the very senior partners is a buddy of mine for like 20 years. So he happened to be in Austin doing whatever. We had dinner last week socially, we talked some business. And he goes, Mitch, I like that team. We're worried about inflation. And I'm like, I don't really see it. I think they're protected from inflation, but you know, but I just, it was a social dinner. So I just filed it away. I said, I hear what you're saying. We'll, you know, we'll respond. And we have a meeting with his investment team in 15 days. Right. And so we know we need to address inflation, and we tell the guys, listen, guys, what we need from you is lots of deliverables. We need to be handling the groups that are already showing interest, but we need to continually work to fill the funnel. And, you know, cause it's, you fill the funnel with 200 and maybe you get two or three out, and then that's success. Right. So we need to keep working. And among other things, and one of the things that we want to fill the funnel is I want deliverables. So first one is, you know, we'd like a short piece on inflation that we can send out and go, you know, you think you know what's going on in the world, but let me tell you why and inflation is a valid concern, but this is how we protect ourselves, and this is why it's still a good investment in inflation, right? And there are other things like that that we've suggested, right? And I was on a kind of an all-hands call a couple of days ago, Monday morning, and you know, and the investment team is like, yeah, you know, our view is if you have to talk to somebody about inflation, they're not going to come in. And what we really ought to be doing is going out and finding people that get it right away and are just willing to write checks, right? Which is, I'm like, I'm telling you, in my opinion, I disagree with you respectfully. Like this is an all hands meet. This is hand to hand combat. And it goes on for years. Like you have to take everything seriously and fight it. And they're like, yeah, Mitch, we've been doing this for a long time. And I'm like, and I've even called other LPs, investors in our world that are fans of theirs who I'm friends with. And I'm like, hey, David, you know, this is what I'm hearing. He goes, Mitch, that never happens. They don't know what they're doing. You know, they're resting on their laurels from 15 years ago and are frustrated. But and I can combat it by going to the senior people on the investment team. But I also have this mid-level person on the capital markets team who calls me later. And, you know, she's playing politics. And it's like, yeah, Mitch, you know, your message wasn't received well. And, you know, I think we just ought to focus on new people, right? Because, you know, it should be so easy to get this done. And I'm like, nobody wants to do the work. And I'll just give you one other tidbit, right? So this investor person, as an aside, there's one investor that's an investor of theirs in two or three funds who, you know, she's been sending emails to somebody that's been gone for 2 years, and she's investor relations, right? Like their current investors don't even know how their funds are performing or when their money's coming back. And there's so much good news to share and they don't share it because they've given up, right? Or there's another investor of theirs who said, you know, we talked to them and they're like, man, we don't even know them. We know we have an investment with them. I'm not even really sure what they do. And, you know, they're listed as a 4 out of 4, meaning we're not going to invest with them again. They don't even know what's going on. And so, In a world where the investment team, again, all the nuts and bolts of this place are good, but the investment team is resting on its laurels and frustrated, and they're being undermined by this capital markets team, which is, you know, trying to deliver feel-good messages and, oh, everything's going to be fine, in a face of, I'm telling them we have to do the work and fight here, I don't really know where to go. You know, because if I go to the investment team, then, you know, I feel like the capital markets team is going to feel like I'm going around them, and then they're going to start being political. If I go to the capital markets team, they're going to, you know, not deliver the message that I'm delivering to the investment team because they're pussyfooting around. Quite frankly, I think she's afraid of losing her job, which, you know, she should be. And so, you know, my view is I'm good at what I do, and I want to tell them, right, you hired me to do a job, to give you advice, to guide you through this process. You need to work with me and just be, you know, poor choice of words, but stern about it. But I'm really kind of confused, right? I've never been in a situation where the capital markets team and the investment team don't operate as one. I've never been in quite such a political situation, right? What feels political and tenuous. And I still think there's all sorts of opportunity for success. I don't know how to actually get it going the right way. My whole team is frustrated. Yeah. At this point.
So you got a couple of things here. One is, you know, you're an advisor and a consultant.
Yep.
So in the role of advisor and consultant, all you can do is consult and lay out in clear terms consistently. Hang on a minute. I think I lost something here. Can you guys hear me okay?
I can.
No, hang on just one second. I can't hear you guys. Hold on. You there?
I can hear you.
Okay. Sorry about that, guys. Went to a Bluetooth headphone of mine somewhere else accidentally. I don't know how. Okay. So because you're a consultant and an advisor, what you get to do is you get to give them your best advice. They can choose to ignore it and decline it. You simply have to lay out your belief about the consequences to ignoring that. And then release it and let them know, document it. Let them know on this date, I'm going to formally send you this email so that we have it for reference later. You've hired me to give you my advice. I am giving you my best advice. My conviction based on my experience is that this is what's required. If you elect not to do that, here are some of the consequences. You guys get to choose. Once you've chosen, we will respond accordingly, or we'll resign the business. You know, like you now have to choose how much you want to work with an organization to put your blood, sweat, and tears into something that they aren't going to be successful at. Or it could be that you're wrong and that some part of them is right, and you're going to learn that there's a lot of things they can achieve that you don't think they can, and you're going to support them in the process. And you're going to learn with them. Either way is fine. You just have to be willing to live with consequences on your end too. And there are consequences. One consequence is you continue to work for a client who doesn't get it. You continue to exacerbate your own team. And while you're making money, you're losing morale. And that has a cost. That doesn't come without a cost. Alternatively, you let the client know, this is our belief. This is what needs to happen. We would not be doing our job if we continued to allow you to do things that we think are going to hurt your business. And so I think at this point, we got to think about transitioning to a different company. So that's another option. So it depends on how serious it is. It depends on how big they are. It depends on how serious you are. But you probably won't be able to get them to believe you. They've already got their narratives established, and you don't have the authority or the power to shift that. What you do have is the ability to tell them clearly and repeatedly how serious you think this is. And then you really can't ring that bell anymore. After a certain amount of time, they start to close the door and they stop listening to you. And then your ability as an advisor is now heavily compromised. Your ability to actually be heard will go away.
Yep.
So I do a similar thing in my work, especially when I'm consulting companies in marketing. I'll say, like, this is the wrong message and it's the wrong strategy and you're focused on the wrong thing. And they'll say, we disagree. We think we want to go this way. And I'll say, okay. And I'll execute their plan, having registered what my dissenting voice was. And then sure enough, it doesn't work. And I'll say, yeah, it looks like we need to pivot. How about we try it this way now? We gave that one a try. Let's try this way. Or I say, I don't want to work with these people.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And perhaps it comes to that, right? Because ultimately, if we're spending time doing things that we think won't make money,
yeah,
then it's not worth our time.
Yeah, that's about your own integrity then.
Right. And what about this political issue with the capital markets team and the political person on the capital markets team, who I think is undermining the message?
If it were me, I would try to find every way I could to get direct information. Most politics is played with hidden information. So when you have somebody who's saying one thing to one group and saying another thing to another person, but holding all the information is when they're the center point where they have all the data, you really have to break in and get all the data. And then you've got to be smart about what you say to who. And I think in your role, because you're not in the organization, the best thing you can do is just be consistent. Say the same message to everybody each time. Focus on the work, not the people. Let them play politics if they want. That's about their survival in the organization. But try to get direct access to information. But always the message is, I'm only here to make you more successful. I'm only here to help you raise more money. You've selected me. And because of that, I have a responsibility to give you my considerable experience and my opinions based on that experience. And so far, none of the conversations that we've had has led me to conclude something other than what I've shared with you. So my perspective holds. And then I would go to the higher levels and say, I'm not going to be able to be effective at this time because there seems to be quite a gap between what we're advising and what the team seems willing and able to do. And I'm not telling you what the right answer is. I'm telling you what our limitations are. And I'm raising it because if I were in your shoes, I'd want to know this.
Yeah, it's helpful.
And then if the lowers get pissed off at you for going up above them, so be it. You let them know. Look, my responsibility is to the success of this firm. And I see something happening and I need to register my perspective, which is what I'm doing. And I'll continue to do that. It's not intended to undermine. It's intended to register a perspective.
Yep. Okay. It's helpful, Shane. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Michelle, are you there?
I am. I just have to find the unmute button.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Do you have anything you want to talk about today?
Well, you know, I've listened a lot to what's going on. I fall into a lot of the similar stuff. Same old, still an occurrence. But, sure. You know, there is a lot of politics, per se, and I'm not good at politics. So, and, you know, this whole company politics stuff, I really don't play well.
So, you've been in big companies before. Mm-hmm. And politics is not your thing, in part because politics feels like dishonesty.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in a political environment, the reframe that I want you to start to play with is it dishonest to play the game of poker and not reveal the hand you have? Is that lying?
No. Okay.
That's just part of the game. It's just a game with rules. That's all. And right. If you decide to play the game, you do so because you have objectives and agendas you want to achieve. And so you get smart about which information you share, when and how, because you're now in a political game. So if I'm going to be in a political game, then I have to be wise and smart about how I play it. Not for the benefit of me, not for my own enrichment, but for the benefit of the organization's objectives. I have to learn to play that game. And one of the things I have to learn how to do is have to know when to share a card and when not to share a card. Because what people, and I did this, people who do often is they enter a political environment and they lay all their cards on the table because that's what an honest, transparent person does. And everybody else in the room goes, wow, they just revealed their whole hand. Okay, I'll play this card and not that card and that. And then I just got played repeatedly. That was the thing because my value was honesty and transparency and authenticity. The problem is that those values are legitimate, but they have to be expressed differently in politically charged environments. And so I just went around sharing and shooting my mouth off, sharing whatever I thought should and shouldn't be and how I felt about it and all that stuff. And I learned later that comes back to get you because that's laying out every single card. So what you're going to be is for you, you have so much emotional honesty and emotional transparency that one of the best things you can do is learn to create boundaries with your own emotions. And those boundaries are saying, okay, which set of emotional truths are going to serve me and the system in this moment? So now you become a strategist, which is different than a politician. There's nothing wrong with being a strategist because a strategist is using a series of choices to bring about greater outcomes. So when you look at a political environment, instead of thinking about this is politics and I don't like politics, just think about this is just strategy in a game. And I'm going to be strategic to support the outcomes of the organization. And that means I'm going to be very strategic with how information flows. Information about emotional information, information that's data information. That is how politics works. It is the flow and the obstruction of information and the distortion of information for someone's personal gain. And you get to play the same game, but no longer with a self-interest. It's with an interest to a greater good. So you, but you have to enter the game. You can't avoid the game.
This is true.
That makes sense?
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense. I mean, that's where I am right now. I have a, overall, small company, different, just different sets of rules going on in general. So, I mean, one of my challenges, challenge is a strong word, but I don't know what other word to put to it. So, as you know, I've been brought in tasks to do a lot of things that really are outside of my authority, so to speak, right, within my realm, because I've been tasked as the manager over a particular department, but my role, my goal, because they brought me in not to kind of rock the boat, is to be the operations lead. And so I still have some of that operations lead, but I really don't have the authority to really be that operations lead, right? Yeah. So I'm trying to strategically lead without really truly overseeing the process, right? I really don't have a lot of pull. I can say, I'm really in that, hey, I suggest XYZ is occurring, but
same thing we were just talking about.
Right. That's where I've been. So in this process though, I've learned there's one of our HR leaders who really doesn't have the experience that I have within the PEO payroll slash industry, very knowledgeable in her HR realm, has, but internal HR or internal payroll, although payroll's payroll, HR is HR, it's totally different when it's outsourced, right? Yeah. Same but different. You kind of walk this line. And she feels that she's entitled to the role that I'm going to be getting or working towards. Well, because she's been there longer and she helped them through COVID and therefore it's hers.
Yeah.
So there's this, there's just this underlying rift, right? That not been generated by me in the slightest.
Nope. She's hanging. She's playing her hand.
Right.
And you get to play a hand back.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, right now we came up with this, we're going to all have this daily huddle, and the idea behind it is great. The execution behind it, I disagree with 100%. I think we are fostering, there is already this underlying rift within the company. There are broken bridges based on trust. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to figure out how to mend. Because we have departments who are not working well together, just they're not communicating. There's, you know, lack of communication, just broken bridges. So wanting to have this meeting to that everybody comes on, you know, everybody comes in. I think to me, you're just fostering, and excuse the expression, a controlled bitch session. Right? Well, we already have enough of that. We really should be coming together as department heads, talking about what we're having, and then breaking and making those difference in our departments.
All right. So let me propose a few ideas for you. These are language cues for you, which I love working with you, because what I get is this total honesty. And by the way, I'm so excited. Congratulations on joining the signing up for the additional 9 months. You guys may not know this, but I offer continued coaching after the 3-month program ends. Some people sign up for that. Michelle's one. I'm excited to work with her. So that's an option for you guys down the road. But the thing that I love about you, Michelle, is your emotional honesty gives me exact clarity about what you really think and feel. And I love that, because then what I can do is I can work with that to help you figure out how to express that in a way that's going to be most effective for you. So one of the phrases that you used was, and I disagree with that 100%. Absolutely true. Emotional honesty. Thank you for it. Now I'm going to give you a word, a phrase that you're going to use instead of that. Not that you ever said it, but if you ever felt like saying it, here's the phrase you're going to say anytime you go, I completely disagree with that. I think that's the most asinine decision you've ever made, right? That feeling that you get sometimes. Here's the phrase.
Happens you're going to a
memorize. Lot. Yeah, it happens a lot, doesn't it? Here's the phrase you're going to memorize. I think about that differently. Could you tell me a little bit more? And then after they tell you a little bit more, you go, would it be okay if I shared my perspective? You ask permission. Okay. Even if you don't have to ask permission, you ask permission.
Right.
Because they say yes. And the moment the word yes comes out of their mouth, I know this sounds crazy, an energetic shift takes place in them.
Right.
When people use the word no, they shut down themselves. When people use the word yes, they open themselves, even if they don't want to.
Right, right.
And so you get them to say a yes. It's almost like a sales technique where you're going, it's a beautiful day, isn't it? Yes. Boy, I'm sure glad I'm here. Are you having a good day? Yes. You get yeses, right? Yeses right. Open people. So what you're going to do is you're going to go, I think about that differently. Tell me more. I think about that differently is no longer combative, right? It's I'm in a different place than you. It's truthful, but it's also bridge building. It says, I'm in a different place. Could you tell me more? I'd like to build a bridge. Okay. Now you've initiated the bridge building and they're going to start to walk across it. And once they walk across it, you go, is it okay if I share my perspective? Yes. All of a sudden, you've changed the outcome of that entire conversation. Even if they disagree with you at the end, even if they don't do what you say, what you've established is, this is a partner, someone that I can talk to, someone that hears me, someone that has valuable input that can make my ideas better. And so I want to hear from her. Whereas before, I disagree with you 100%. It's dismissive. It's invalidating. It builds a wall. It shows that you're basically just a bossy person who isn't going to listen to reason. Because you've already got your mind made up. So you're closed. So can you hear how radically different the emotional context of that conversation is?
No, I do. And just know that I didn't use those. I use those words with you, but I didn't use that with them.
I know that. I know that, but this is important.
Yeah. My approach was, although I agree with, I'm 100% on board with the concept, I disagree with the execution is what I said.
Great. So even that, you could say, oh, I love that concept. That's a great idea. I fully support that. I wonder about the execution.
Okay.
The phrase I wonder about.
Yeah.
Is better than I disagree with the execution.
Okay.
Because now you're just, now you've entered the land of curiosity. We're just exploring together. I wonder about the execution.
Right.
What if, and then you, now you're in the land of possibility and imagination instead of, I've decided your approach is wrong, mine is right, and now you've got to do my approach or I'm going to be pissed off.
Got it.
Now,
not understand.
Even if you don't, even if you say the right words, sometimes your energy can convey the opposite. So that's why when I said, have you ever, you know that feeling about every 10 minutes when you're like, I completely disagree with you and you want to say it like regularly? Because right. You often do have really good answers and you're probably right most of the time. And that's really frustrating to be right most of the time. Maybe not all the time, but most of the time. And so all I'm trying to do is give you gentler pathways into conversations that set a completely different emotional context for different outcomes. And that's an important thing for you to be aware of, is every word you say and the tone you say it in is immediately planting seeds to determine whether you have weeds or fruit in the garden you're creating of this conversation. And so that's why each word you go, okay, I wonder if, curious about, I think about that differently. You're sowing seeds of harmony, even though it's disagreement. And because you're a big personality and you're a strong personality and you're a high bandwidth person, we've already talked about all this, those words have power in your mouth more than they do in other people's.
Okay.
Your words have more power than most people's words. And so that's why you want to be thinking about those language patterns. And the more we work together, the more I'm going to be able to get you help with kind of memorizing these little language packets that you start going, huh, okay, let me try that on for size. And you're not going to do it perfectly. You're going to notice sometimes. You're going to be like, oh, I said that instead of this. I should have said that. And you're going to notice the conversation is going to turn. You're going to be become aware of the way in which they're not so interested in talking to you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They might have felt bad after that comment. And you want them feeling good.
Right. No, thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. I don't play poker very well. I don't play poker at all, but yeah. I couldn't play poker at all.
Yeah.
I tell people I don't have a good poker face. You're going to, if we're face to face, you're going to read it on my face. And I have no idea that it's happening.
Yeah.
Like I still can be saying all the right words, but you will know in my face that I am irritated and and frustrated and whatever else. One, I guess it's just whatever's it, but two, my face starts turning red.
Yeah. How else, what is another way you know you're irritated? How do you know you're irritated?
Well, I just feel, I mean, outside of the feeling, that's the only other way I know.
Okay.
So
one of the things that will happen that will help you is putting some space between, and you can do this, by the way, this is not, you know, when you say, I can't play poker, I don't play poker, not true at all. You can absolutely play poker. It is a learned skill. And what we're talking about is absolutely a learned skill. The only ingredient required to learn it is a desire to learn. If you would like to learn it, it's yours.
Oh, most definitely.
Good.
But I do those meta phases, right? Where guys just know that if I leave, because even if I leave from a great conversation or a conversation and I'm still frustrated from that conversation, but not necessarily frustrated in this conversation, like I said, they can read on my face.
Yes.
That I'm frustrated.
Yes.
And I'm, even though this is not, so it gives a bad signal then. So I'll tell individuals, please know that I don't have a poker face. So if I look like I'm frustrated, please just either A, know that I'm not frustrated with you, or B, ask, hey, did I do something? Because I just carry it as much as I try not to. I just do.
Yeah. I love all those tactics. Those are really useful and they're super helpful. In addition to those tactics, we're going to teach you how to put some space between the felt experience and the reaction of your being.
Okay.
Because when you get a little bit of a gap, you can actually create a different response. But right now, the emotion is so immediate and present that you don't even notice the reaction's already occurred.
Right.
So that's why I asked the question, and it's good for you to just reflect on it. You don't have to know the answer now. It's the next time you're pissed off, just ask yourself, how do I know I'm pissed off? And you're gonna be like, because I feel it, duh. Right? But try to get behind that. See if there's anything that came before it. you can start to notice, ask yourself when you get pissed off, on a scale of 1 to 10, how pissed off am I? And a weird thing happens. The moment you start doing observation of the event, it de-escalates without you even noticing. So that's why I want you to ask the question, how do I know I'm angry? Well, my gut is tight. My face feels hot. Okay, that's how I know I'm angry. In addition to the feeling, there's physiological changes. Mm-hmm. And now I'm aware of, these are the signs that I'm pissed off and irritated. And if you heighten your awareness, and by the way, this is a very advanced practice. If you heighten your awareness of just the physiological sensations of anger and irritation, you're developing the capacity to create that gap. Because all of a sudden, emotions are merely sensations in your body.
Okay.
And when they're just sensations in your body, which is all they are, they're just energy and motion coursing through our bodies. That's all emotion is. They're neutral. Then you pause the story about the sensation you're having long enough to choose a reaction consciously. Prior to that, because you have no awareness that it's just a body sensation, you feel it and you act because the story is there. I'm pissed off, I'm angry, I need to do something about it. I need to confront it. I need to stop it. I need to challenge it. I need to suppress it. I need to, whatever it is you want, you feel you need to do about it. The first step is, can you just notice it's happening without acting on it, without judging it?
Okay.
So how do I know I'm angry? What physical sensations are happening in me the next time I'm pissed off? If that doesn't work so well, if that's too advanced, try on a scale of 1 to 10, how pissed off am I?
No. I think I'm good at all the above. I mean, it's things I'm working on anyways, trying to not respond in emotional brain versus logical brain, so to speak. So, you know, as I work through, you know, personal as well as professional pieces of the puzzle, some of it is colliding, learning there are certain triggers that go on throughout my professional that collide with my past personal experiences. So trying to figure all that out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And everything I'm telling you, by the way, has relevance for your personal life too.
Most definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you're just, all you're doing is developing an awareness of this human named Michelle. Become a researcher, become a person who studies this being and this body that is on this planet for 35,600 days. If you live to 100, it's all you get. You come into this world, the body is formed. Some personality lives for a period of time. Body goes back to the earth. Mm-hmm. Who is this being that is making this arc? How is this body responding to this experiences that it's creating? Become really curious about that without so much judgment.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. David, I'm coming back to you. We got some time left. If you have other questions, comments, anything you want to engage with, anything that's already been shared.
One thing that came up was how to manage this new layer of leadership in our organization. How do you also, like, you know, bring together the people that you're considering on the same level, right? So, and like, for instance, like the way I have mine mapped out is this technical services director, right? Like, they are going to support the sales manager or sales director. They're going to also support the service and installation director. How, like, from an actual function standpoint, like, how do I create those? Because in a lot of ways, he is going to be more of that, like, resource that gets pulled in as needed. And like, each department is, you know, it's their job to use him responsibly without stretching him too thin. However, him having no direct reports, is that a problem? No.
Oh, you can do that. You can do that. You want to limit how many of those, because the point of this is for you to manage fewer people. Mm-hmm. So there may come a time where that person should live under someone else, like a director of operations down the road, but you're not there yet.
Exactly.
So it's totally fine right now. And it's very common for people at a kind of, you know, in a C-suite, if you think about it at the highest levels, it's not at all uncommon to have somebody who's in marketing and their job or HR who are on the senior leadership team, but their role is almost entirely internal. And what they do is they are a service provider within the organization.
Right.
And so, yeah, that happens all the time, and it's very doable.
And then as far as like communicating that in turn, so, because this is a position that's another guy who's been here for a long time, that he's very much customer facing, has his own like sales, so to speak, and also goes out in the field. I'm trying to transition into like kind of the twilight of his career. Like, you know, as he comes to the last 10 years with us, you know, he's been with us for 20. In the last 10 years, like this new role that's going to be less demanding. You'll have to come in on the busy Saturdays and you'll have some more time. But in it, you're also going to continue to maintain certain, like, you know, status as far as, you know, compensation, you know, based on company performance and bonuses, which he gets now, as well as, you know, helping to support the growth of the team. You know, so you're in a leadership role, but you don't have any direct reports. And I think that, you know, it sounds like
awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Sounds great. So,
sounds awesome.
Yeah. So I think that that'll be well received. Again, it's another one of those, like, you know, transitions of power. And, you know, so ultimately, like, he's there to make sure guys are doing the right thing from a technical and safety standpoint, as well as, you know, sales, you know, the salespeople are, you know, putting the compatible products in each scenario. So then, getting back to my original question of making sure that those units are communicating on a consistent basis. Is that like do you have like a leadership meeting once a week?
Yes.
Or?
Yes. Great question. That is also in module 4.
Right.
But I want you to watch the module on how to have better meetings, the training, the videos. There's a series of them. There's a workbook. There's a whole way. What I want you to do is I want you to get familiar with that. And then on our next call, we'll design your meeting cadence and meeting structure based on that.
Okay. And then the staging the ascent, you know, do you have like you had also mentioned that.
Sorry,
Drew, I think about.
I lost you. Hang on just a second. Okay. Can you speak again?
Yeah. Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
So. I think it was Drew who mentioned, you had mentioned too, like, don't let too much time go between, like, you know, that first initial, hey, this is a thing, to, you know, the next base camp. Like, for those staging the ascent, do you have a recommended timeline to try and follow?
It's totally different depending on what change you're trying to lead. You know, for example, if you're going to be changing the values of an organization or the vision, time doesn't matter. You can be like, right. Hey, we're going to be changing those things. And then people are like, cool, we'll get around to it eventually. Because it doesn't really affect them that much. I mean, they care, maybe they don't, who knows. But that one can go a long time. If you're talking about like, hey, we're thinking about having layoffs, we'll get back to you in 9 months. That's a huge problem. You're going to be just disrupting all productivity immediately. So that's why that one has to be super short, super tight. This is mostly a positive change, but it could affect a number of people. The people that it's going to most affect, and negatively so, are the people who signed up to work for this company because they wanted to work for you. And now they're going to work for somebody else. And so the conversation you get to have is an acknowledgement of that. You know, hey, I acknowledge that for many of you, this is a significant change and that it may be an unwelcome one. And I respect and appreciate that. I also know that it's a necessary one. Because in order for me to do what I know I have to do for this organization, I have to be freed up to play the role that I've been asked to play. And so this organizational structure, while for some of you, it may be not what you were wishing for those of you, maybe you're fine with it, whatever, wherever you are is understandable. And I want you to know that I appreciate you nonetheless, and that I couldn't do what we do without you all. And I also know that in order for me to do my job better, I've got to be freed up to be able to think longer term. And I can't do that in the current structure. So what you're doing is
I was going to just say, given that we are, you know, it's a small 30-person company, maybe going to, you know, 40 and 50 in the near future. do you still, like, with legacy employees as well, like, for that exact example of, you know, people who were used to coming to me, do you still, like, leave open a pathway to, you know?
I'd be very, very careful with it. I'm not saying you shouldn't leave it open. I'm saying that's called, you know, level skipping. And so, for example, if you say to somebody, hey, you're the new boss, you're accountable, you have authority for these areas, and this now person reports to you, but they're your best friend from childhood, and you're going to hang out with them and have barbecues on the weekend, that manager is going to be undermined immediately, because you're going to be
there is a lot of that here, because we have, like, people who I've known since I was a, you know, child, maybe, you know, 25 years with the business. So it's like, you know, I'm still going to have those relationships regardless of, like,
absolutely. And you're going to, they're going to want to talk to you about business, and you can even have conversations, but you have to say to them, hey, I'd love to have this conversation with you. I just want to make sure that Jeff knows about it, or is at least in, or is in the room, either way.
Okay, so that's a good way to handle it, is just making sure that there's at least been that checkpoint of, like, you've already approached this, and, like, this is okay.
I just said mythologically, Jeff, in this case, Brian. What Brian needs to know is he will always know when you're going to talk to a team member, or if you have, so that he's never surprised by it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Jeff needs to know. Right. So the way that you honor chain of command when you have lots of informal relationships and legacy relationships is you simply become a little bit more scheduled and planned. You remove some of the spontaneity. Instead of drop-bys and just having a chat, you first go to the manager, or you contact the manager and say, hey, I need to stop by and check in with this person, just letting you know. And then after you have the conversation, you go, hey, had a conversation, this is what we talked about, just letting you know. That way they always feel safe that those legacy relationships, they're still in the position they're in. Otherwise, they're going to feel undermined.
Got it. That's super helpful.
So you still have the conversations, but you're just formalizing conversations a bit more. And sometimes you're going to mess up. It's no big deal. You just go to the person later, like, hey, we were at a barbecue. This person talked to me. I just wanted to let you know. I probably should have told you. If I had known, I would have told you before. Just kind of the conversation just sort of unfolded. Just wanted to make you aware of it. If you need to follow up, if you have any questions.
Yeah, it's that necessary transparency. It's that, you know, anything that happens in that scenario is communicated, but those, you know, it's not everything that happens here does not need to be communicated here. It's everything that happens here needs to be communicated up.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll just say, when you're communicating to the company as a whole, in addition to expressing appreciation for their roles, acknowledging that change is hard, reminding them about your role, that your role is different. But the overall of this is, while this may be difficult, this is all really good news for all of us, because none of this would be happening if you hadn't all been performing so well that we keep growing. It is because you are performing so well that we are growing. It is because we're growing that we have to create layers. And while that may not be our favorite thing to do when we feel like a family, we need that in order to continue to be really effective. And just know that the more we grow, the more opportunities open up for you.
Yeah, I like that.
Maybe this round didn't go the way you wanted, but stick around. Give us your best, because in the future, I believe there's a round that's going to go better for you.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of messaging is going to be really helpful.
Right. Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, I like to remind people that, you know, we're trying to maintain that same level of, like, you know, customer high level service. Cause I mean, that is our, you know, we're not the price, you know, we're the value and service company. And it's just, like, instead of, you know, where we were at 1500 transactions, like, we're approaching 4,000 transactions. So it's like, you know, that has been by your upholding our company values. However, it's also at a, you know, pressure to the staff, and we need to create these additional checks and balances and layers.
Yep. Excellent. Excellent.
Thanks.
Yeah, you bet. All right, everybody. I think we're at the end of our time. Michelle, why don't you stick around? We'll get you signed up for the additional coaching. Mitch, pleasure chatting with you. We are not, it's possible that you guys are going to get reminder emails for next week, but I think we're going to pause for next week for the holidays. And we'll just pick it up January 5th will be our next call. So if you get reminder
happy emails holidays, week, everyone.
Yeah, please ignore.
Happy holidays.
Enjoy.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Nice seeing everybody. Thanks.
All right. Thanks again.
Bye. Bye, everyone. Happy holidays.
All right. Michelle.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations. I'm so excited.
Me too.
Let me get you hooked up here. Let me just. All right. Where am I? So looks like we got this one. Okay, so looking at I think I have some of your information here. I just need to get the billing address and credit card number.
Okay. Just I need to get my wallet. So I'm going to turn off the camera so you don't.
Yeah.
Well, some people, that gets people dizzy. So. Plus you don't want to see my empty house. Oh my Lord.
How is the move going?
Well, we have, Lord, please, I pray that everything stays on track. We have our home here in Florida is under contract and has already passed its contingency. So now we're into making sure all the funding occurs, which should be an issue. It should not be an issue. We just went under a contract for a home in Georgia that's having the inspections today, which shouldn't be an issue, but. Because my husband's a veteran, so our home is under a VA loan. Yeah.
Okay.
So my home is under a VA loan. And that's how we're purchasing the other home. So it's not that I don't have but to do everything, like this home has to sell first before I can purchase that home. So
right.
It's been challenging, but at the same time. Everything happens for a reason and it's all in his time. So,
yeah, right. Right. That's how things are. So, what inspired the move?
So my husband works for Delta, and has for the past, he's worked for Delta since 98. We moved to Florida. So he's always worked in Atlanta. We moved.